Hello and welcome to Ag PhD Radio. I'm Darren Hefty.
And I'm Brian Hefty. Thanks for joining us today. Today on the show, we're going to talk a little about crop rotation restrictions. As always, we would be happy to take your phone call if you want to call into the show. The number here is 844-44-AG-PHD. It's 844-442-4743. You can email us, radio@agphd.com, or send us a note on Twitter, AgPhD Media, Darren Hefty, or Brian Hefty. We are live in the Morton studio today. As we get into the last half of August here, you know, we are getting down toward the end of the season for our corn and soybean crops in the Midwest. And, you know, we need to be thinking a little bit about next year already. So that kind of brings us to our topic today, crop rotation restrictions. You know, a lot of areas in the country this year have had decent heat. They've had decent moisture. Where we worry about this more is when you don't have a lot of heat, you don't have a lot of moisture, and let's just say you've got some challenging soil conditions. Maybe it's high salt. Maybe it's very high or very low pH. Situations where it's not going to allow whatever herbicide got used to break down properly. So when you look on the label of any crop protection product, it's going to tell you how long you have to wait before you rotate to a certain crop. But what we often say is that's a guideline. And if you have extreme conditions, there's no reason why you can't extend that guideline. Let's say it's 10 months to rotate back to a certain crop. Well, maybe in your case, it should be 12 months or 14 months, something like that. We're going to talk through that a little bit on the show today. Darren, anything else you wanted to get to? Otherwise, I know we've got a whole bunch of mailbag questions in as well.
You know, the big thing is just when you're deciding on a late season management decision and we're thinking about crop rotation restrictions, be focused on your next year crop. Don't think, well, I'm just going to do this just because I think this will help me right now. Make sure that you're looking at the long-term implications of what happened. We saw a lot of carryover issues this year with Stinger. We saw a lot of carryover issues with HPPDs. We saw carryover issues with Flexstar. Just had a number of different issues that could have been prevented by watching crop rotation restrictions. The other thing is, of course, if you have overlap, if you have extreme weather like drought, those kinds of things all come into play too. And in some cases where drought is a pretty common thing, you really need to think, well, if it's a 10-month rotational restriction, I probably better give it at least 12 and maybe 18 just to be on the safe side if I 100% for sure want to avoid having a problem. All right, let's get to the Ag PhD mailbag.
It's now mailbag time with Brian and Darren.
Okay, I got this one from Rock. Got some yellow wood sorrel coming in after I combined my wheat, where my ground is laid fallow and waiting for me to go back to orchard grass later on in the fall. It's where it becomes a problem. So my plan for next year is to try to suppress this weed by shading it. You know, one thing that I'd say, Rock, is cover crop. And we were just out in some of our cover crop today. It was pretty thick, Brian. There weren't a whole lot of weeds coming through where we get good cover crop establishment after wheat. That would be another option for you.
Well, I thought that's what you just said he wanted to do, is by shading it out, that
means
cover
crop.
Yeah,
he said he's leaving it fallow, but he's hoping to suppress it by shading it next year. Now, maybe that's what you mean.
That to me means he's going to put cover crop out there. So that's why I was surprised when he said, well, another thing you could do is cover crop. I think that's what he's talking about. Yep, you sure could do that. But let's keep in mind, there are most likely still going to be some weeds that do get going. So it will help, but just because you have a cover crop growing out there doesn't mean you're going to control all the weeds. So in a lot of cases, guys, if they want no residual and they're going to seed another crop very quickly, then you got to really look hard at products like Roundup and AIM, Germoxone, even some of the SU, sulfonylurea products like the old Harmony, products that have no residual. That's what you got to focus on if you've got a sensitive crop that you're going to plant soon after.
And Rick also had a comment that ragweed is really causing me issues this year with my allergies, and bush hogging is not a good option for me. What are your favorite ragweed treatments that could be used even mid to late season. I guess that'd kind of go along the same lines as what you just
said.
What
crop?
Well, I'm assuming we're talking about the same thing here in this ground that wheat was harvested off of that's going back into.
Okay. Here's one of the big problems we see when we talk weed control with people anywhere. They think about killing that weed once it's big. Well, I think about killing that weed when it's small or before it's ever emerged. If you do that, then you usually don't see it very often later in the year, especially in a thick crop like wheat. So what I would suggest is go out there with 2 to 3 ounces, probably 2 ounces, 2 ounces of Sharpen. So I know it's spendy. It's about $10 an acre. But if you do that pre-emerge, you usually don't have ragweed in your wheat. Post-emerge, best thing I would say is probably Husky.
All right, got another question. This one came from Ricky. How do we get rid of mare's tail that has invaded our lawn this year?
240, like Freelix.
Yeah, I like Freelix the best too. And kind of like we said with the last question that we had, we want to try and attack this mare's tail when it's small. So when it's in the rosette stage, that's a great time to do it. And the fall is a great time to do it.
The best time to kill weeds is when they're there or before they're there.
Well, okay.
So in other words, on a regular basis, 2,4-D or Freelix, and it's going
to
take care of it.
Let me add a comment to this, because we had a tree grove, Brian, that we used to mow mare's tail just repeatedly. Every week we're out there mowing, and we're able to stop it from going to seed.
Yep.
So you could look at it that way, too. True. Regular mowing will keep it down, but
it
does really choke out the grass in that small area around the weeds.
Yep.
So I'd prefer just to spray it and not have an issue.
Yeah, but for an annual or biennial weed that doesn't reproduce by rhizomes, in other words, by the roots, then you wouldn't really have to worry about that. I agree with you, Darren. That is a good idea. Just make sure that it never goes to seed, and eventually you're going to wipe out the seed bank. No problem. You're done.
Right now, show today, we're talking about crop rotational restrictions. We're also answering your calls and questions. Radio at agphd.com is our mailbox. Otherwise, you can just give us a call at 844-44-AG-PHD. We'll be right back after this. Stay tuned.
Farmers, you put a lot of money into growing the best crops possible every year, so it only makes sense to make sure every bit of that ends up in your tank. Estes patented concaves stop rotor loss with less grain damage. Best of all, they work in all crops. No more changing concaves. Call 765-650-4131 or visit EstesPerformanceConcaves.com and get what you harvest. That's 765-650-4131.
No two seasons are the same, so you need your crops to rise ready for whatever's in store. Now, there's one simple decision that provides coverage on four fronts. The Acceleron portfolio offers protection against disease, insects, nematodes, and even moisture or nutrient stress. In the fight against the unpredictable, rise stronger with Acceleron seed treatment products. Learn more at AcceleronSAS.com/rise-ready. Performance may vary. It's important to use proper PPE when handling treated seed.
You don't settle. You're driven. You're committed. You're a farmer. And you are relentless. Mycogen Seeds is relentless too. We won't stop. We never settle. We don't back down. We work hard and we work smart to get to know you and your farm and make sure you get the right seed on the right acres. See for yourself at Mycogen.com or talk to your local Mycogen Seeds dealer and let us prove our relentless dedication to you.
Farming in the dark? We've flipped the switch on. More insights, more options for more farmers. Introducing Smart Insight daily satellite imagery, on-farm weather stations, crop modeling, scouting, alerts, available in more locations than ever before. Smart Insight, the only crop monitoring and digital agronomy solution with daily insights. Visit farmersedge.ca for details.
Back. You're listening to Ag PhD Radio, broadcasting from the Morton Studio today. We're getting a lot of questions in the last few days, and it's interesting towards the end of the season, all the things that pop up. And one of the things that we're getting a lot of questions about is on grain markets. I've got Scott Harms with us right now with Grain PhD. And Scott, as farmers are dealing with the old crop on the farm yet and new crop that's either just coming in or about to come in, it gets to be kind of a busy time of year. I didn't get Scott
especially
on.
As we get more and more crop tours going on, as far as finding, you know, what's really out there as opposed to what the USDA projected. But it's also a good time to sit down and prepare for, you know, hopefully an eventuality of higher prices.
All right. So last week we had a USDA report. Wasn't really well received by the markets. And it's been a little while now since that came out. What are your quick impressions?
Well, the corn market I didn't think was all that negative. Yeah, they gave us a record yield by almost 2 bushels an acre or more. But even that, they couldn't get the carryover estimate above 1.6 billion bushel. And that's because of the strong usage that we have with corn. And that's going to be the case going forward. So corn I didn't think was that negative. Soybeans, no question, was pretty negative. You've got a higher yield estimate, pretty lofty carryover projection that we're going to have to deal with here for a little bit. So prices are going to remain in check for the beans, probably nowhere to go fast there, unless there is some kind of trade deal done. On the wheat side, it was a little disappointing to me in that I think that market had some real potential to not only create some real price strength for itself, but also perhaps buoy the corn market a little bit too, if the USDA would have been a little more aggressive in cutting the global supplies of wheat. They were pretty conservative in that area. I think there's room to go down going forward. So that's certainly a market to watch. But it's got good footing, good support there, and exports for wheat should pick up here as we move into the winter months.
Okay, so given that information, what kind of conversations are you having with farmers?
Well, in regards to corn, we're preaching patience. Be ready to capitalize on the market, but these aren't levels where we want to be moving a lot of product or making big, major pricing decisions. You know, there's going to be a lot of real field data coming out in the next couple of weeks. We're going to have crop tours crisscrossing the U.S., giving different opinions. And this is a year where it's going to be real important because of the fast maturity rate that we saw for corn. I think there's some real questions as to regards whether we can produce a record crop when you push a crop to maturity that fast. And we'll only know that as people get out in the field and start pulling ears and looking at and counting kernels and such. So there's going to be some real information, real, you know, good information coming out in the next couple of weeks. There's one firm that's already been out in Iowa, for example, and they have a corn yield in Iowa about 191 bushel per acre. The USDA is using 202, and last year this firm was pretty close to their estimate. So they have some real evidence that the Iowa, you know, especially Iowa corn crop could be a lot less than what the USDA is projecting. I think that the USDA is overstating it. So, you know, for that reason, we're going to be just kind of sitting with resting orders above the market, wait for a healthy rally in corn when they start realizing maybe this crop's overstated. But, you know, you need to take advantage of that when it happens. Soybeans, a little less optimistic there. I think you need to be ready to pull the trigger, hedging some futures, selling some cash, selling some maybe some call options on any kind of price movement above the $9 level. But you definitely want to try to keep some powder dry in case there's some kind of deal done, because that would certainly be a game changer if they get some kind of deal done on the trade front. You know, because then you're pushing back quite a bit of exports back into the balance sheet that they had to take away just a couple months ago.
Yeah, that will be really interesting to see. So, okay, we've got a lot of producers out there that are undersold and working on getting some more sales on the books. But you're giving us some optimism here at the same time and talking about buying calls and this type of thing. So what is a guy to do right now?
Well, you know, everybody's got a different, going to have to use a strategy that fits them. But, you know, when we look at markets, we look at based on value, based on where we expect the price should be, and then where price is within that particular value range. And right now, for example, in corn, we think we're at the lower end or towards the bottom end of where it should be from a value standpoint. So there's more room to the upside than there is to the downside. So we wouldn't be making any sales. We talk about buying call options. There may not be a huge move, but we've talked in the past about minimum price contracts and how producers, you know, can go to their elevator and price grain, and then, you know, the elevator will basically buy a call option on their behalf to finish out that contract, and it reopens their upside. Well, if you have a futures options account, you can do that yourself, and you've got the flexibility to right now step in and maybe spend a little bit of money on a call option with the expectation that in a 20 to 30 cent rally or 15 to 20 cent rally, you're going to be doing some pricing of the inventory. And rather than buying that call option and paying more for that call option at that time when you price the inventory, you've already been proactive in that regard and bought that call option today. You don't want to spend a lot of money, but I think that that's a strategy that we talk to producers about, basically being legging into what is a minimum price contract as opposed to doing it all on the same day. And but that, again, that's a strategy not for everyone. For the people that just want to that don't want to mess with the call options, you know, sit down. This is going to be a little bit of a quiet time in the market period. Sit down and set those targets and get those offers in place at your grain elevator or in the futures market to take advantage of. We think there's a real potential here in corn, but you got to be able to take advantage of it. So sit down and set some price targets so you don't miss it.
You know, when we think about next year, a lot of producers are talking about having more corn acres, and certainly with the economics the way it looks, that's probably the way to go. But, you know, that can all change, like you said, if we get a trade deal done. What do you think about 2019 sales right now? If we're talking about the next crop, are there any opportunities that we should be looking at?
Yeah, we don't like to market too far ahead, but in this particular case, we're getting ready to end the 2017 marketing year, and people should be sweeping their bins and be cleaned up and really can focus on 2019. And it's all about opportunity. If the market gives you that opportunity, by all means, I think we would do some pricing this winter in the DEIS-19 futures around the 425 level. It just provides some nice comfort for you in case there is a big jump in acres going forward. You get a little bit priced. It's hard to do that with your grain elevator because they're going to nip you a little bit on the basis. So it is important maybe to have a futures account that you can take advantage of and put that offer in at those levels. But again, we wouldn't be doing it here, but we'd absolutely be doing some pricing because as you say, the economics point towards probably a jump in corn acres. A lot can change by the time those decisions are made. But as it stands today, I think we'll have a hard time getting much above the 420 to 430 area in new crop values. I think we would do some pricing there. 2020, you know, we're very hesitant to go out that far, but I think you could probably trickle in a few sales in the futures market if that were to occur too.
Yeah, a lot of questions coming up now. Of course, you can find quite a bit of information at grainphd.com if you're curious about some of the strategies that Scott was talking about here, about just establishing your own minimum price contract without all the fees and everything else that you may get going through a grain elevator or something like that. You can set up your own account and do this yourself. It's pretty simple to do. The education-based approach that Grain PhD takes, I just love that you can see how these contracts work, what your risks are, what are the pros and cons, and that kind of thing. So check that out. And then, of course, if you have any questions around grain marketing or grain markets, you can send them to us at grainphd.com as well. Scott, thank you so much. Really appreciate having you on today.
All right, Darren, have a good day.
Yeah, lots of stuff going on in the grain markets, and a lot of times it feels like we're not in control of those things, but we want to take control for your farm and with your operation. That's one of the reasons that we feel Grain PhD is such a good program for you. Right, we're going to get back to the topic at hand here with crop rotational restrictions as we're nearing the end of the growing season in much of the country. We're also going to take your calls and questions. Our phone lines are open at 844-44-AG-PHD. You can send us an email, radio@agphd.com, or find us on Twitter, AgPhD Media, Brian Hefty, or Darren Hefty. Stay tuned, we'll be right back. Mm-hmm.
Grow corn that pays you back for your investment. Headline Amp Fungicide from BASF is the smart choice. It consistently delivers plant health and disease control benefits like increased stress tolerance. You get more yield from an at-tassel application than any other fungicide, with best-in-class preventative and post-infection disease control. Grow smart with BASF and Headline Amp. Talk to your retailer today. BASF. We create chemistry. Always read and follow label directions.
Farming in the dark? We've flipped the switch on. More insights, more options for more farmers. Introducing Smart Insight daily satellite imagery, on-farm weather stations, crop modeling, scouting, alerts, available in more locations than ever before. Smart Insight, the only crop monitoring and digital agronomy solution with daily insights. Visit farmersedge.ca for details.
They don't leave nicely. When worms and aphids attack your crop, fight back with Nudrin. Nudrin is a powerful insecticide that's applied after your crop has emerged. Its quick knockdown and almost immediate control stops worms and aphids in their tracks. Learn more about Nudrin and how to protect your crops from in-season invasions. Visit us at rotamnorthamerica.com. That's rotamnorthamerica.com.
One thing growers need to succeed is freedom to choose what they put in their fields. That's why FMC Freedom Pass Agronomic Rewards make it easy and economical to pair your favorite seed brand with products proven to protect crops throughout the season. Choosing Authority brand herbicides and other proven FMC products pays more than ever before. Calculate your potential incentive at fmcagus.com/FMC Freedom Pass today. Always read and follow label directions. Authority brand herbicides are not registered for sale or use in California.
White mold on soybeans is a costly problem. Andiamo fungicide from SipCam Agro is a powerful and affordable solution. Here's why. Andiamo moves rapidly throughout the plant, providing fast and lasting control. And Andiamo features a low use rate, broad disease spectrum, and a better return on investment than other fungicides. For best performance on white mold, apply Andiamo at first bloom. Learn more about Andiamo fungicide by visiting SipCamAgro.com or calling 877-898-9514.
In 1949, Morton Buildings constructed our first machine storage building to establish our bond with the farming community. Since then, our relationship has grown, and so have our product offerings. From the smallest specialized operation to the largest agricultural enterprise, we understand the needs of your business and continue to evolve to meet industry demands. Plus, when you build a Morton building, you're backed by the strongest warranty in the business. To learn more about the Morton Advantage, visit us online at mortonbuildings.com.
Welcome back. You're listening to Ag PhD Radio, broadcasting from the Morton Studio today, talking about crop rotational restrictions and also taking your calls and questions at 844-44-AG-PHD. Let's head down to Georgia to start this part of the show off. We got Glenn with us. Glenn, how are you doing today?
Hey, I'm doing good. Yourself?
Not bad. Not bad at all. I'm really getting anxious for harvest, though. I want to see how things are actually going to do out in the field. I'm seeing some differences out there. You've already got a little bit of harvest in the back pocket. What'd you learn with the first crops coming out, and what do you still got out there?
Well, we had a good crop of sweet corn. We had a hard time marketing it, but we had a good crop, and we had a good crop of wheat, and we're about halfway harvesting corn now, and it looks pretty good.
Good. Hey, Glenn, my question for you is, we're talking today about crop rotation restrictions, and since you raise a number of crops, how big a deal is that for you, finding the right herbicide that isn't going to hurt whatever you want to raise next in your rotation on your farm?
Oh yeah, that's a big deal. I mean, we have so many crops and vegetable crops, and we have to really watch what herbicide. We're limited on what herbicides we can use.
Do you know let's say, a year in advance what a field's going to go to? I mean, we don't raise vegetable crops on our farm. We're raising corn, soybeans, and wheat, the big acre crops. But, I don't know how that market works. In other words, could it be even a month before you plant, you go, ooh, there's a good market for whatever, carrots or sweet corn this year, so I wasn't planning on it, but now I think I'm going to put a bunch of acres to that. Does that happen?
We do a little bit of shifting, but not a whole lot. We pretty much know ahead of time because we plant one crop. For example, we always plant carrots behind either sweet corn or corn, and then peanuts behind it. And then sweet corn, we plant it behind corn or sweet corn. You see what I'm saying?
Yep. So, yeah.
Each crop follows the same crop over and over and over again.
So are you doing that because of diseases, or does that have something to do with this herbicide residual thing that we're talking about?
Well, mostly we do that because of diseases and nematodes, and we just make the herbicides work around it, you know. we just make that work, you know.
Okay, so you don't have to answer this question, but have you ever had a situation where you applied a herbicide and you then thought, oh no, I can't now raise the crop that I want to raise afterwards? Has that happened to you, or have you always had the plan far enough in advance that you've been okay?
It has happened, yes. It has happened. We have a potato farmer that, sometimes we own the farm and we don't communicate like we should, but it has happened. But generally, when we stay one crop behind the other, it's not an issue.
Yeah. You brought up an interesting point, though. There are some guys who will rent their ground out occasionally to someone who raises potatoes, or let's say it's sugar beets or something like that. Yeah, and then when you're not the guy applying the stuff, you're kind of trusting that they've put on what they told you they put on, right?
Yeah. And we try to communicate. I mean, I do that. I rent some guys that grows potatoes, and we limit our herbicides for them, and they do for us as well.
Yeah.
You know.
Yep. All right. Well, hey, Glenn, great talking to you today. We certainly wish you the best with the rest of your harvest season, and hope you're having a great summer.
Okay. Thanks, Brian.
You bet. Thanks, Glenn.
Set up to North Dakota, we've got Eric with us, a farmer up there, also does some crop consulting work, and I hear you're out combining wheat today, Eric.
Yeah, we are. We got good weather, and the wheat yields are actually pretty decent this year.
Excellent. All right, so you've got several different crops in the rotation. How tricky is it for you with crop rotational restrictions, choosing crop protection products?
It's you always got to watch. There's like three main ones to kind of watch for: FlexStar, carryover, to various crops, you know, with your timing. But then also first grade, we get to use a lot more with tougher weeds in the Roundup beans. And also, we got to watch the stinger, whether it's Resicor or Sure Start in your, corn going to soybeans the next year.
You know, one of the factors in this is short growing season, certainly in North Dakota. I don't get as much heat as other areas of the country, but also soil pH. Do you find big differences when you have pHs that are, I'd call it extreme, when they're more than a point away from neutral?
Yeah, we've started zoning more fields in the last 4 or 5 years, and you'll have, it's amazing, in just a 60-acre field, you'll have... you know, goes from a 5.3 to a 8.4, and you can definitely see it in the crop, you know. And then we try and plan ahead and target the rates accordingly the next year with the pre-herbicide or whichever herbicide you're going to go with later for carryover.
Now, you mentioned three different products that could be used post or could be used pre. Let's start with the FlexStar that you were talking about there. Obviously, you're using that in soybeans and trying to control some broadleaf weeds out there. Do you see more guys going to Liberty Link soybeans or dicamba tolerant soybeans to try to get away from some of that FlexStar use?
It kind of varies by the year and then with variety performance. But there's pockets where there's more Liberty, and then there's more Xtend this year, definitely. And we had better conditions this year for spraying Xtend, and we knew more about it. so we could, you know, we could plan ahead. But I'd say there's probably a little bit less next year because we've seen the dry years, and usually gets dry here, and then we should carry over the following year.
Yeah, I really like your three-crop rotation with wheat in the mix as well, and I know some guys are raising other things too, but that helps get away from some of these weed problems so you don't have to make as many of those tough choices. Like Stinger, for example, in corn, are guys just going to switch away to something different, or is it one of those things where we just have to be careful how much we're using for a rate?
I think it's more the rate. I mean, the first year, we're just trying to, you know, push the envelope as far as we can until we find that happy medium rate where it's enough for longer residual, but yet not too much for the following year.
Sure, sure. How about in no-till and burndown? Do you have a lot of no-till in your area? And if so, when we think about these rotational restrictions, that certainly goes into picking some of the products that might get used.
Right. There's not a ton of no-till, but there's getting to be more of the, you know, a lot more minimum till. And then with that, you're getting more cover crops, especially with wheat. And that's probably the toughest one for planting. If you're going to, whichever cover crop, you're going to go after wheat, and then which herbicide, you know, you pick.
Yeah, the cover crops make it a little bit tricky. If you want to do a perfect job on weed control yet not touch any of them, they oftentimes they're not even on the label. I mean, do you find a lot of products that you can say, oh yeah, I know that's going to be fine on turnips or radishes or whatnot? I don't even notice those crops on a lot of labels.
Right. So you just, yeah, there's not a lot of them, but I know the guide that you guys have, it shows some of that in there. If I remember from one of your workshops this winter.
Yeah, it's tricky trying to find all that information, that's for sure. All right, so end of the summer here. Any questions you're getting from neighbors or other farmers that you say, ooh, we're just going to have to wait till after harvest? Or, I mean, are there still guys thinking they want to rescue something out in the field?
Yeah, it's the main one that gets to be more every year, water hemp. There gets to be higher populations, and you can definitely tell which guys use that Gamba in their dicamba beans, or we're able to use like Warrant or generic Dual, but yeah, that's the main one, is the water hemp home. Can we still go after it, or just wait and fight it next year?
Yep, that is a relentless weed, no doubt about it. Now, hey, been talking to Eric up in North Dakota. Good luck here as you finish up wheat harvest, and hope you catch good weather here the rest of the growing season.
All right, you too.
Darren, we had a few drown out spots on our farm, and one spot where our guys didn't spray any herbicide on 1 acre because they were worried about some sensitive new trees that we had there. We're letting the water hemp go. So you can spray late. In some cases, you just say, I just don't know if it's worth it anymore, and it gets down to the end of the year. Those are tough calls to make sometimes. All right, well, we will continue talking crop rotation restrictions and get more to your questions right after this. You're listening to Ag PhD Radio.
With DuPont Approach Prima Fungicide, there's a difference. A real difference you can actually see in the health of your crops and the health of your bottom line. From superior coverage to more reliable performance, Approach Prima delivers long-lasting results against hard-to-control diseases like frog eye leaf spot, while the preventive and curative action gives you the application flexibility you need for greater yield potential. So see the difference of Approach Prima for yourself. Visit approachprima.dupont.com to learn more. Always read and follow label directions.
Every farmer knows that in order to be profitable, you need to maximize the return on your crop input investments. Hi, I'm Scott Harms, an agri-risk specialist with Grain PhD. Without an effective and flexible strategy, your grain marketing plan gets stuck in the mud. With Grain PhD, you get the clarity and guidance a solid marketing plan needs. Our free GrainBridge software simplifies your cost-profit analysis, and our risk specialists are here to help you develop your plan. Sign up today at grainphd.com.
If there's one thing farmers know, it's to expect the unexpected. And when the unexpected happens, you need to change plans right now. Not only does AgroLiquid have the crop nutrition products you need anytime, anywhere your crop would benefit from added nutrition, but we also have an outstanding team of field agronomists ready to help you determine the best use of your fertilizer dollar. Find your winning team at agroliquid.com.
Farmers value their independence. So does FMC. We understand the freedom to choose the best products for your fields is key to your operation's success. With the exclusive agronomic and economic incentives of the new FMC Freedom Pass program, you're free to choose your favorite seed and protect your crops all season long with proven FMC products. To learn more, visit fmcagus.com/FMC Freedom Pass or contact your authorized retailer today. Always read and follow label directions.
Zero. Zilch. Zip. That's the total cases of resistance documented with Manzate ProStick. That's right. Zero. Zilch. Zip. Not all fungicides can say this, but Manzate ProStick from UPI can. This multi-site fungicide not only controls walnut blight, it plays a critical role in delaying the development of resistance, which is why Manzate ProStick is the foundation fungicide in all walnut blight control programs. For a recommendation, contact your PCA. Always read and follow label directions.
Every season, you try to raise the bar to achieve your best corn yield ever, but disease can stand in the way. Like gray leaf spot, northern corn leaf blight, anthracnose leaf blight, and southern rust. New Dilaro fungicide can stop them. Two different modes of action work on the diseases for the entire spray interval, delivering best-in-class dual mode of action residual efficacy for extended performance. It's the help you need for personal best yields. Keep raising the bar with Dilaro from Bayer. Always read and follow label instructions.
You're listening to Ag PhD Radio, broadcasting from the Morton Studio today. We're talking about crop rotational restrictions, which is really important to know about, especially towards the end of a crop season. Are things that you're trying to rescue out in the field now worth it? Is potential carryover to next year's crop an issue? That's something that you have to think about before you make those choices for sure. Now, we think about it in the north a lot, and we were just talking to Eric up in North Dakota. Short growing season, some extreme soil conditions, like really high pH or really low pH in certain areas of the field. But what about down in the south? We got Trey with us. He's an agronomist down in Mississippi. Trey, how's it going?
It's going well. How are you guys today?
We're doing well. We're doing well. All right. So crop rotational restrictions, is that a big concern for growers in your area?
Yes. Tremendous concern. Very dynamic situation. A lot of things we have to take into account when making decisions on crop rotation and what crops to plant from year to year.
Okay. So talk to us about some of those considerations. What kind of things are you talking through with farmers?
The majority of the crops that we grow in the Mid-South are going to be corn, soybeans, cotton, rice, some peanuts. As far as row crop production in the area that I'm in, you get into some other areas, you have to take into consideration some vegetable type crops, but the vast majority of the acreage is going to be those crops that I just listed. Soil type is our biggest factor. In our more coarse textured soils, we're predominantly going to plant more corn, cotton on those acres. Our mix to heavier soils is going to be more soybeans, and then you start getting rice into the mix. The heaviest soils a lot of times are going to be in a soybean rice 2-to-1 type rotation. Commodity prices obviously drive a lot of our crop rotation in this part of the world. We've seen a dramatic reduction in cotton acreage over the last 10-15 years, only to see it come back now, just primarily due to low commodity prices for corn, as well as soybeans, and then an uptick in cotton prices. So the economics drive a lot of it as well.
So what are people thinking as we get to the end of the 2018 growing season here, or at least that end is in sight? Are you looking at some more acre changes, or do you think things are going to be kind of similar to this year?
Based on what we're hearing right now, we're in the harvest now. I'm in Louisiana at the moment, and we're cutting corn as we speak here and in Mississippi, as well as a little bit in southern Arkansas. But from what I've been hearing, we're probably going to see even more cotton acreage next year. I think there's so much uncertainty right now around the tariffs. Moving forward, that's leaving a dramatic amount of uncertainty around our crop mix for next year. But one thing that I have heard seems to be a common theme is there likely will be more cotton next year.
Yeah, I'm totally with you. As a farmer myself, I feel like there is more uncertainty than ever at any point in my life, because the way I look at it, if we get a deal worked out with China on trade, we could see 50% higher corn and soybean prices almost overnight. 50%. I really think that. On the other hand, if it doesn't get worked out, things could get even worse. So that, yeah, it's really hard to make decisions on that. Okay, so just earlier in the show, we were talking with Eric up in North Dakota, and he mentioned three specific herbicides. When we get back to this crop rotation restriction type thing, he said Flexstar, First Rate, and Stinger are the big ones that he's concerned about in his area. Which ones are you concerned about where you say, boy, I got to make sure farmers use these products right and they rotate to the right crop, otherwise we're in trouble?
Yeah, I think to a large degree, we've pretty well taken out a lot of the herbicides that that really can dictate us from a crop rotation standpoint. I am like Eric in North Dakota, and Flexstar from Esifen, you know, the active ingredient that we call it down here.
Yep.
Can have an influence on a crop rotation, not so much now since we've moved to so much dicamba-tolerant crop and even lilt-tolerant crops as well.
Yeah.
So the herbicide component is not as big of an issue as what it was just a few years ago. There were a number of herbicides several years ago that could really have an impact on peanuts and cotton, you know, as far as herbs and things like Scepter and there's one in corn, peanuts called Strongarm, mm-hmm. That we use that would really, we'd have to be really careful from a crop rotation standpoint. But I hate to say this, but to a large degree, we really don't even hardly talk about herbicides anymore to speak of from a crop rotation standpoint.
Yeah, and the troublesome ones, a lot of guys have figured that out, have learned how to manage that now. Well, we've been talking with Trey Kroger. He is with Silent Shade Planting Company down in Mississippi. Trey, thanks a lot for the time. That was great stuff.
Well, thank you. Gentlemen, have a good day.
Yep, you too.
All right, we've got Tom up in Canada right now. Tom Weir, he does some consulting for Farmers Edge Crop Insurance. A bunch of stuff, Tom. You sound like a busy guy.
Well, this time of year, yeah, it keeps me out of trouble.
Okay, so we went to the extreme south here, to the Gulf of Mexico. Now we're coming north. When we talk about crop rotational restrictions, what does that mean for you, and are there some big products and crops that you really have to watch out for?
Well, I think generally, as the previous caller was talking about, we've got it pretty well managed. The problem comes when we get hit with a dry year like we had last year, and for a good part of the Canadian prairies, a chunk of it's dry again this year. And that really throws the monkey wrench into the works, because products that were working well and guys weren't having an issue with all of a sudden become an issue. I think the other thing is, I think we get a little bit complacent. We just came through 7 or 8 years of abnormally wet years, and so things work well. The one thing I've learned over the years is if you've got moisture, there's a good chance that chemical is going to break down. But when you don't have moisture, whether it's broken down by hydrolysis or microbial activity, all of a sudden things slow down or stop, and then you have issues.
Yeah, that's for sure, and I know where we're at too. We get concerned about this because we do hit a drought year every so often, and sometimes we don't rotate crops in those areas. If we had corn in that field the year before, we might go back in corn just to be on the safe side. Do you see growers in your area taking that same approach?
Not really. Generally, right where I am, which is sort of halfway between Winnipeg and Saskatoon. A lot of our rotations are wheat canola, and guys have found that if they start growing back to back, canola's our big cash crop, and if they grow canola back to back, you're paying a 20-25% yield penalty for it, due to disease mainly. So mainly guys stick pretty good with that rotation. And the problem is some of the herbicides that are used on wheat can cause issues with canola. Canola, because it's such a small seeded plant, because it's a brassica, is pretty susceptible to a lot of products.
So what are crops looking like in your area right now, Tom, and what are growers expecting this season?
Looking right where I am, they're looking very good. We have had some excess heat, which canola doesn't like, but right where I am, guys are generally thinking it's going to be average to above average. And right now it looks like good quality. They're just in taking off peas right now. And the yields are coming in 55, 60 bushels the acre, which is, and I've heard up to 70. So pretty good for the heat we've had. And we haven't had, we were dry off the start till into June before we got much rain. So, yeah, things are looking really good. The canola crop is going to probably be average, and the cereal crops may be average or a little bit above average.
Well, considering how the year started, that's pretty good. I guess happy to hear the rains came in time and were able to help the crop out a little bit. We're talking to Tom Weir up in Saskatchewan. Tom, thank you so much. Really appreciate the time, and good luck here the rest of the season.
Okay, thank you.
Talking about crop rotational restrictions on today's program, and we're also taking your calls and questions. We're going to get into the Ag PhD mailbag here right after this short break. If you want to send a question in yet today, radio@agphd.com is the place. Otherwise, you can find us on Twitter, Ag PhD Media, Brian Hefty or Darren Hefty, or you can just give us a call. Our phone lines are open at 844-44-AG-PHD. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Avoid the V-shaped pattern of injury caused by chemical buildup in your booms. The Express End Cap from HiPro eliminates the dead ends that lead to herbicide buildup and provides easy access to your booms, giving a complete flush between applications. HiPro, helping you spray better.
Want to cut production costs without losing yield? The Soil Warrior can reduce trips across the field, optimize nutrient placement, and improve soil health. So you can lower production costs without losing yield. See what makes the Soil Warrior different and better at SoilWarrior.com.
This is Dave Robbins reporting from what can only be described as a cornfield under attack. With me is Jim Stafford, a local corn grower. Jim, what's happening here?
Mites, banks, two-spotted and carmine, you name it. This corn is under attack.
What are the plans, if any, to deal with this serious situation?
Well, we're not going to stand for it. We're going to fight the mite.
How?
ZLSC Miticide. Just one application by Grounder Air gives long-lasting mite control. Now that field corn, popcorn, corn for seed, and corn grown for silage are all labeled, mites don't stand a chance.
But what about their eggs?
ZLSC affects mites in all stages, even eggs.
What kind of timetable are we talking about?
ZLSC reaches mites under the leaf where they feed and hide with translaminar activity. For long-lasting protection after a single application, apply ZLSC at early threshold or as a preventative treatment.
ZLSC. It lasts so mites can't. Contact your local Valent representative or Valent authorized retailer for more information. Always read and follow label instructions.
If there's one thing farmers know, it's to expect the unexpected. And when the unexpected happens, you need to change plans right now. Not only does AgroLiquid have the crop nutrition products you need anytime, anywhere your crop would benefit from added nutrition, but we also have an outstanding team of field agronomists ready to help you determine the best use of your fertilizer dollar. Find your winning team at agroliquid.com.
Hey, Bill, any advice to control tough weeds and rootworms?
That's easy, Jim. Buy two, save three.
Wait, for weeds and rootworms?
Buy two, save three. Combine your Impact or new Impact Z herbicide purchase with a qualifying insecticide and save $3 per acre.
Buy two, save three. That is good advice.
For details, go to buy2save3.com. Impact, Impact Z, and Buy 2 Save 3 are trademarks owned by Amvac Chemical Corporation. All rights reserved. Impact Z is a restricted-use pesticide. Always read and follow label instructions.
With Preaxor's Xemium brand fungicide in your soybeans, it's hard to know which comes first, disease control or plant health. Preaxor fungicide is proven to deliver both with consistent performance, so your soybean crops get plant health benefits like growth efficiency and stress tolerance, plus longer-lasting disease protection, all contributing to maximum yield potential. Grow smart with BASF and Preaxor fungicide. Talk to your retailer today. BASF, we create chemistry. Always read and follow label directions.
Thanks for listening today to Ag PhD Radio. Brian Hefty here along with my brother Darren. We are going to get to the Ag PhD mailbag here in just a second, just to kind of wrap up on the crop rotation restrictions thing. first of all, we really like seeing residual herbicides out when they're used properly. We have to always be careful about what we're going to rotate to, so you got to plan ahead. If you say, boy, I have absolutely no idea what I'm going to rotate to, it's going to make it really tough, and it's also going to limit your choices on residual herbicides if you need to rotate to anything. So be a little bit careful on that. Make sure you're checking the labels. And if you're in an area that has a drought year, has a year that's exceptionally cold, you have adverse soil conditions like we talked about earlier in the show, your pH is way off, you got high salt, you got poor drainage, these types of things, it's very possible that it's going to take longer to break down that herbicide, because herbicides are they're broken down most by soil microbes. And if you don't have good conditions for microbes, well, guess what? You don't have good conditions for breaking down those herbicides. They're going to last longer in the soil. Now, that could be a good thing if, let's say, you're in a perennial crop like pastures and the Tordon you use or Milestone lasts 3 years instead of 2 years. Well, great. You just got some free weed control. That's awesome. But if you're rotating crops, well, now you've got a concern. So just be real cautious about what you're doing there. All right. When it comes to Ag PhD mailbag, one of the most common questions we've been asked here over the last few weeks has been, what's going to happen with Lorsban? Because there are a lot of people talking about this decision that was made recently. Let's see, it was in the U.S. Court of Appeals for the Ninth Circuit Court. So supposedly we're going to lose Lorsban 60 days. No, we're not. That's not going to happen. And here's the reason why. We've got to see what the EPA makes for a final decision. So they can't just, after 50 years of approving stuff and science proving it's fine, just all of a sudden at random say, you know what, we're going to just cut this off. No, they can't do that. This is a public agency and they have to go through all the process of getting it removed from the market. I would also say until about roughly 10 years ago, Lorsban wasn't even a restricted use product. So if it wasn't even a restricted use pesticide, don't get me wrong, it's an organophosphate. There is some inherent danger with it. I'm not saying that there isn't. But what I am saying is there are a lot more products, there are a lot of products just in our society, not even having anything to do with ag, a lot of products in society that are more dangerous than Lorsban that are labeled, used, and aren't on the chopping block. With Lorsban, I am a little concerned. I've had a lot of calls from over in Minnesota, for example, where they say, Brian, what are we going to do if the pyrethroids don't work on our soybean aphids anymore? They do where I farm in South Dakota, but for some guys in Minnesota, they're having this problem. They say the pyrethroids don't work, and if Lorsban is gone, then what do I do? Because they took Transform off the market. Transform's amazing, easy on beneficials. I have absolutely no idea why they pulled Transform from the market. But anyway, without those products, what do I do? Well, the only thing I know of that's labeled for aphids would be dimethoate, and that's the same chemical family as Lorsban. And you can just imagine, if they take Lorsban from us, they're probably going to take the other organophosphates, which would include dimethoate, shortly thereafter. So we'll see. And, you know, it's one of these things. As farmers, we'll figure out a way how to deal with these things. But when we don't have tools to get certain insects under control, in some cases, it's going to mean, you know what, maybe guys go away from planting soybeans in some of these areas where they have a lot of insect problems. I don't know what's going to happen, but I do know we're not going to lose Lorsban in 60 days. I'm not that worried about it in the real short term. We'll see what happens. Eventually, yes, we might lose it. I just don't think it's going to happen right now.
All right, let's get to a question here. We got one from Power, who asks, your base saturation recommendations with calcium at 65% plus and so on and so forth, would these be true in turf grass as well? You often talk about corn, soybeans, and wheat.
Yeah, what we're talking about is getting a healthy soil. That's the number one factor we want to look at. If you have good levels of calcium in your soil compared to magnesium, for example, then you have a more porous soil. You have a soil that is less prone to soil compaction and things like that. Plus, calcium is super important in terms of a nutrient. We want to have good calcium levels out there. potassium. Is potassium important for any crop there is? You bet it is. If I had potassium levels at, let's say, 0.5% or 0.9% in the base saturation test, would I be happy with any crop I'm going to raise? Nope, I sure wouldn't. So for the most part, yes. There are going to be some variances. So, for example, with trees, we know that with trees, we need even higher levels of potassium than with other crops, like, let's say, wheat. So with wheat, I might be comfortable with a 4% base saturation K, but if I was going to raise a new shelter belt, I'd really want that to be 7 or 8% base saturation K. So there are going to be some slight tweaks, but for the most part, yes, we're talking really about all crops, and this is about overall soil health.
All right, thanks for the question. Really appreciate that. I got one from Tim here. Brian, I'm going to pass you a couple of pictures that I have printed out here. Tim said, I was recently picking some corn from my garden, and I came across some ears with giant fungus pods on them.
Looks like smut to me.
It is smut. This came up rather quickly. He said, we just started coming out of a drought, and I'm curious what caused this. I previously planted winter wheat and prior to that had chickens in the area.
Yep, the drought and possibly mechanical damage or damage of some sort. It got fed on or something like that. The one ear, Darren, I thought it was interesting. There are a whole bunch of kernels here that did not pollinate. You can see some pollinated, but a bunch didn't. So obviously this plant was under major stress. If we, as farmers, can reduce stress, there is less incidence of this type of thing happening. When you have smut, it's generally speaking a result of major stress on that plant.
Okay, I got another question here in regards to potassium. Because of chicken litter, we are discouraged from adding potassium to our fertility program. But I'm convinced that you must add potassium for higher yields, and the level in local waters really hasn't changed, except when we got a new regional sewer plant that came online. We've seen a distinct drop in phosphorus in the river since then.
Wait, yeah, because he's talking about two different things. He lost me there because we were talking about potassium, and then he's saying something in the water. I'm like, well, potassium typically isn't getting in the water, so that's not a real big issue.
Nope, and I'm wondering if he's talking about phosphorus.
Right, maybe is the whole email about phosphorus? Okay, so here's the thing. I don't care if we're talking about P or K. We need to look at always what's the soil test say, and what does the analysis of that litter say? So you don't want to way overdo it. I don't want 3,000 parts per million of P1 phosphorus out there. That's completely unnecessary. Do I want 100 parts per million? For me personally, in my situation, yes, I do. So if I'm at 8, then I got a long ways to go. With potassium, if you're only at 2% or 1% base saturation K, like we just talked about a minute ago, that's not going to be enough. You're going to need to be at least at 4% up into the 8% range. If you're already at 12% base saturation K, you're probably excessive and you could actually be doing more harm than good. So with both P and K, you can get to points where it's going to hurt you by applying more. Not only could it potentially hurt the environment with too much phosphorus, but also you can limit micronutrient uptake. You can, with potassium, if you get too much out there, you could potentially limit magnesium uptake. I mean, there are some downsides too. So we always want to talk about not just total amounts of nutrients, but we need to get nutrients in balance in ratio with other nutrients in that soil.
Yeah, the other thing is we just want to get a good return on our investment. So all this work that you're doing, you know, like here you say you're discouraged from adding additional potassium. Well, take a look at the return on investment, as Brian was saying.
Yep.
And we just want to maximize things. So if we're not getting enough in our crop, in addition to the soil testing, pulling some plant tissue analysis and just looking at the full picture for the season will certainly help. All right, one last one. This is from Brandon, and he said, what's your opinion with grain carts? Should we go with tracks, or should we go with flotation tires?
The wetter you are, the more you're going to need the tracks, but also I would say flotation tires, and if you have them at the right pressure, that's pretty good. On our farm, we're usually quite dry in the fall. We have lots of calcium in the soil, good organic matter levels. I'm not as worried about compaction as maybe somebody in a different situation that doesn't have good drainage. They have a tremendous amount of rainfall, low organic matter, those types of things.
All right, thanks for all the questions that came in today. We really appreciate that. And thanks to you for listening. Be sure to join us again each weekday for more Ag PhD Radio.